You'll have plenty of time for questions in a little while. Now, to expand the discussion on women in Islam, we have Tara Povey from University of Sydney, who's a PhD student, and she'll give you a little bit of a background as well on her work.
Thank you very much. I really wanted to start by really congratulating the organizers of this forum today. I think it has been a very important forum, and I think it's very important to hear the voices of Afghan women, especially in Western countries where the issues of women's rights, and particularly, of course, this is true in the case of the rights of Afghan women, is not only a very important issue in itself, but is actually being used to justify war and invasion of that country. So I think it's so important that we hear from Afghan women what is the real picture in Afghanistan and what they are doing to actually make their societies and change their societies and make them better. And I myself have been researching women's movements in the Middle East for some years. My background is actually Iranian, and I have been to Iran on a number of occasions recently. And there I have actually been speaking to Afghan women who, like yourself, have been living in Iran and actually have been working with the Iranian women's movement. So today I just wanted to share with you some of the experiences of talking about Afghan women living in Iran and some of their experiences, and also talk about the Iranian women's movement as well. But just to start, as I say, I think when we hear the voices of women, Afghan women, who have both resisted the Taliban and also continue to resist under the US occupation and after the US invasion, I think it forces us to reconsider this popular view that we have in Western countries a lot of the time, that women living in Muslim-majority countries somehow are unable to resist, or that Muslim women are simply passive victims of male oppression. I think if we look at the role that women are playing in Middle Eastern countries, and particularly, and of course, as the speakers have been talking about, the role that Afghan women are playing in their own communities, we actually see that very different picture emerging, that women are not actually passive victims of male oppression, but actually they are fighting for survival of their communities, and they are also also resisting. Also, I think when we see, as the speakers have been talking about, women challenging patriarchal readings of Islamic religious texts, which are used, of course, to justify women's oppression, it challenges the idea that gender relations in any country, be it a Western country like Australia, or you know, countries in Europe or America, or Muslim-majority countries, are somehow fixed and unchangeable. Of course, gender relations are not fixed. They are not unchangeable. They are changing all the time. And as the previous speakers really put across very clearly today, gender relations are related to the level of development within that country, the level of access to education, the level of access to healthcare, the level of poverty, the level of illiteracy, the level of conflict. So when we are looking at countries in which there is a very low level of development, there is decades upon decades of constant conflict, as the speaker was saying, you know, these are young women who have spent their entire lives living with conflict, then we have to see the relationship of that experience to actually gender relations and how people deal with gender relations. So as I said, I'm going to start just by talking a bit about Afghan women's experiences in Iran. As the speakers have very clearly stated, over three decades of constant conflict in Afghanistan has resulted in the deaths of over 3 million people and forced a third of Afghanistan's total population, which is really quite astounding figure. That's over 6 million people into exile to be actually forced to leave Afghanistan and go and live in different countries. And the majority, of course, of people who have been forced to leave have gone to live in the neighboring countries of Pakistan and Iran. Of course, Afghanistan, as the speaker mentioned, is a very ethnically diverse and religiously and linguistically diverse country. Diverse communities of Afghans do share very close relationships with Iranians. The linguistic relationship of Farsi being spoken in both countries, a majority of Afghans who actually live in Iran, Hazara, and Shia, so there is a also a religious and cultural connection there as well. In fact, there is, of course, a long history of crossing the border of Khorasan, of crossing the border between Iran and Afghanistan. And in fact, one woman I spoke to in Iran, who is Afghan but had lived for a long time in Iran, said, I said, do you consider yourself Afghan or Iranian? And she said, well, I feel that this border between Afghanistan and Iran is painful to me. I don't want to decide whether I am Afghan or Iranian. But despite this very close relationship, Afghan migrants and refugees have faced a very, very difficult situation inside of Iran. Of course, they are facing economic disadvantage, they are facing social marginalization in Iran. Many Afghan refugees and migrants are middle class, they are highly educated, so they face, like many migrants, they face a loss in status, being forced into menial jobs, etc. And of course they also face racism by Iranians against them, despite this strong cultural and historic connection that they have. And of course they are also dealing with the trauma of facing war and conflict and losing their homeland. In terms of the government, of course, they are, again, in a difficult situation. They are facing a hostile government, which is both socially conservative and economically neoliberal. So it is both kind of limiting their civil and political participation in Iranian society, and is also actually attacking welfare, access to education, etc. After the Iranian Revolution in 1979, there was, of course, mass education, health and welfare campaigns by the government, and Afghans actually benefited from this. They were given residence and they were eligible to entitlements which are available to all Iranian citizens, such as free education, free national health service, and food subsidies. However, in the 1990s, the Iranian government began to actually withdraw subsidies on the grounds that the state expenditure on Afghan refugees had reached above US $10 million a day. Of course, Iran is a country in the world with, I think, the highest number of refugees, mostly Afghan and Iraqi refugees of any country in the world. However, Iran doesn't receive any financial support or recognition from the so-called international community. Of course, after 1979, the Iranian Revolution ended Western economic and political interests in that country, and since then there has been no support for these refugees. Of course, Afghan migrants and refugees have also gone to Pakistan. Interestingly, the UN has stated that actually the situation of Afghan migrants and refugees in Iran is much better than the situation in Pakistan, which is really very bad at the moment. But of course, Pakistan receives large amounts of financial assistance and aid from the international community. So in the mid-1990s, when the Iranian government decided to withdraw these support for Afghan refugees in Iran, young Afghan women living in Iran actually decided to not accept this inevitable attack on their communities, but also but to fight it and actually set up their own schools. Particularly schools catering for the education of women, Madrasa Khodgaran. And of course, as you've heard from the previous speakers, that Rawa has, of course, many schools, especially those focusing on the education of women in Pakistan as well. And these are actually funded by income-generating activities, so also contributing to the very important issue of economic independence for women. And I think some of the handicrafts here, which you can see made by women, are actually part of this income-generating program to support these very important schools. So despite the many, many problems that Afghan women have faced in Iran, they have actually organized within their own communities. They have set up local organizations, schools, healthcare facilities, orphanages, and they work with local and international NGOs, as well as being very critical of international NGOs. Another activist said to me in Iran, "What is the point of Western countries spending all of this money on wars and then spending all of this money on humanitarian reconstruction after the war? Why not just actually not go and attack and invade other people's countries in the first place?" So they are critical of the role of international NGOs, but they are also working with them. So, through their own efforts, they have actually created the space in which they are active agents in leading their own communities. And I think this is where we see also that this has gone into the issue of gender relations. And as I said, the gender relations in Iran or in any country are not static. There is a relationship between women's ability to resist economic disadvantage, to resist neoliberalism, to resist war, and actually to struggle for their gender rights as well. And this, of course, depends on the political context in which it occurs. And what we see in Iran, interestingly enough, is that the active participation of women in politics in Iran has also enabled Afghan women living in that country to challenge restrictive gender relations within their own communities from within the framework of an Islamic culture. So they're actually arguing for their rights from within this Islamic framework, and they are challenging those people who use that same, who use a different interpretation, who use what I would call a right-wing interpretation to try and actually discriminate against women. Another very important thing that has happened in Iran in terms of the women's movement is that alliances have been built between secular or atheist feminists and Islamic women's activists as well. And a kind of realization has taken place that is actually necessary for us to build these alliances and to work together to, for example, to make a better situation for women. You can see that in Iran, because of the historical presence of the women's movement and because of the very important role that women have played, for example, in the revolution itself, they played a very important role. Women in Iran have more rights than in neighboring US-backed states. They have strong presence in workforce, in politics. They're highly educated. The literacy rate of women in Iran is 99%. Women make up 65% of all students entering universities. And the UNDP, I always bring up this statistic, it's quite interesting. The UNDP Human Development Report for 2007-08 ranks Iran as slightly above the US in terms of overall gender equality, which is, this is because it's actually based on access to health, education, etc., etc., and welfare, and because of the level of privatization in the US. I think this is what puts both of them on a pretty low scale, it has to be said. Both of them are pretty low. Now, of course, this is not to say that there is absolute everything is fine in Iran and there is no problems. I think there is still a long way to go in the struggle for full gender equality in both the US and Iran. Also, I don't think it's also, you have to put in a way the reason why this has happened that gender relations have improved in Iran is due to the presence of the women's movement, and actually it's due to women's resistance. It's not somehow that the Iranian government are, doing it out of the goodness of their heart. They have to. They are forced into this position because women are actually challenging, as I said, patriarchal readings of Islamic religious texts. They are formulating their own strategies and their own arguments for gender equality. And they are doing that within this context where Iran is a developed country, Iran has not been bombed in the last, well, since the end of the Iran-Iraq war. Iran has economic development, there is education, there is access to healthcare, etc., etc. And there is, of course, this very large women's movement. So I just wanted to end, because I know that that you are hoping to ask our panelists some questions, by saying that, you know, women in Islamic cultures are not passive victims of male domination to be liberated only by antipathy to their Islamic cultures or by Western military intervention. In Afghanistan, we see a situation where violence has intensified since the US occupation and invasion of that country. So-called reconstruction, maybe the Shazia can talk more about this, but according to my sources, reconstruction is basically non-existent in that country. And in fact, many Afghan women living in Iran that I have talked to say exactly the same thing, that actually the situation is worse now than under the Taliban. It's much worse, or it is worse. But even in this context, women are actually playing an important role in maintaining the survival of their communities. They work together in groups, in organizations, they generate networks, norms, and they generate trust in their communities. And the survival of their communities, who have suffered years of physical and psychological pains of wars, sanctions, and destructions, rest on the largely unrecorded efforts of these very brave women. Thank you very much. Thank you.